Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Spiel on Hamilton. My name is Wendy Schneider, and today I'm delighted to pass the hosting baton to my friend and colleague, Helene Ortman. You may remember Helene from previous episodes where we dove into films featured at the Hamilton Jewish Film Festival. A key member of our festival selection committee, Helene recently hosted an outstanding Q&A following this year's screening of Rabbi on the Block, featuring Rivka Campbell, executive director of Toronto's Beth Tikva Synagogue. Their conversation resonated deeply with the audience and clearly called for more. In this episode, Helene continues that important dialogue, inviting Rivka to reflect on her personal journey as a Jew of color within the mainstream Jewish community. It's a powerful and thought-provoking exchange. I know you'll find it as compelling as I did. And now I bring you Helene Ortman and Rivka Campbell. So, Rivka, welcome to the Spiel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Love the name.
Isn't it great? So, for the listeners, Wendy Schneider and I met with Rivka Campbell in a Zoom meeting a few months ago when we were discussing the after-film program for Rabbi on the Block that we showed at the Hamilton Jewish Film Festival in March. And it was quickly evident that Rivka would be a great guest to help us explore the complexity of this riveting and, for some, very controversial film. But more about the documentary later. It turns out we were right. Rivka was charismatic, forthright, and knowledgeable in her comments and opinions about the film. And so we wanted more. More of Rivka, the opportunity to hear her voice, and give her space to talk about the experience of Jews of color and her personal experience being one. And the opportunity for us, the mainstream Jewish community, to learn more and baby step our way to cracking open the door to build connection to members of our own community we haven't yet met or fully embraced. Rivka, how does that sound?
Sounds great. Sounds like a lot.
For sure.
Sounds good.
So first things first, let's get to know you a little better, okay?
Okay.
I listened to a number of your podcasts, but more about Riv Kush in a few minutes, and I Googled you. How about if I start to unpack your milestones and accomplishments and ask you to comment as we go?
Sure. Great. Wow. I didn't realize I had like milestones.
You do. Are you kidding?
That's kind of amazing to me. Okay. Go ahead.
So, yeah, Rivka Campbell, this is your life.
Like, that's what it feels like. Should I step out and, you know how the show went? Maybe I should, yes. Should do it yeah. Like that.
Okay. No, we're going to go through a few things. So, presently, you're executive director of Beth Tikva Synagogue in Toronto. So, Rivka, what does your typical workday at the shul look like?
Wow. It can vary. I'm an early girl, so I like to come in the morning and take a moment. Depending on how morning minion's going, I might actually join the morning minion. And then I just hit the ground running. I mean, I'm really lucky because I have incredible, amazing staff. So that really helps. In fact, when I first started here, I'd come from a synagogue that had a very, very small staff. And before that, from a synagogue that had basically the staff was myself. So when I came to Beth Tikva, I was like doing things that I was used to doing. And they were saying, Rivka, that's like our job. I was like, so what do I do? And they were like, well, maybe you do like executive director things. So it's great. Like the days, it can be anything. It could be super chill, super quiet, or it could be like chaotic because the building is wonderfully filled with people doing activities. Today is a fairly even keel day, and my dog has joined me, the synagogue dog. So she's hanging out with me today too. So,
Right. So what's her name?
Her name is Tally.
Okay. So it's a mix often between things administrative and then I'm sure all kinds of personal, interpersonal come into it. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. So Beth Tikva promotes itself as a leader in social action and an egalitarian congregation. So can you give us any examples of the shul's activities in these areas, success?
I think one of the things, it's been a work in progress. So as far as egalitarian, they really, it was just before my time, I think, when they fully decided to embrace being an egalitarian synagogue. And one of the things that I did notice that, in my opinion, sort of set them apart from synagogues that aren't necessarily already female-led, like already have like a female rabbi, is that a good amount of the women were engaged and reading Torah and things like that. The women's programs here are pretty strong. In fact, and so sometimes they say, we need to kind of have like kind of men programs too, because the women programs are so strong. And they really have a huge role here. And the female voice is definitely respected here. So that's there's no, great. In fact, right now we smile because our rabbi is Rabbi Grover. And currently right now, the president and the executive director are both women. So I sometimes say to him, good luck to you.
That's great. I remember you telling the Hamilton Jewish Film Festival audience what your mother said to you as a young person. And she said, you've got three strikes against you. You're Black, you're Jewish, and you're a woman. I see these things as value adds, Rivka. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how do you incorporate this trifecta of value adds to your work at Beth Tikva?
Yeah, I agree. Like, they definitely are, like, I think having those different identities is actually sometimes pretty cool. But sometimes, you know, when I say that quote, it's really just was a way to push to realize that you got to be better than everyone else, because, you know, those identities, people will judge you in quotation marks based on all of those. How do I incorporate them? Well, the Jewish part's easy. The Jewish part's easy. And I do try and elevate myself, the woman's voice, the female voice, because I think that's really important. And when we do have challenges around hearing a woman's perspective, really trying to make that first and foremost. And I must say, I have an amazing, the Rabbi Grover who I work with, he will sometimes come to me for my perspective, because he'll say to me, I see it with a male lens, and maybe I'm missing something. And so he'll tell me something and I'll say, well, here's how I see it. And he's like, okay, got it. And I think that's really important, because not everybody will do that, will seek out a different voice. And he, in particular, will also do it with the Jew of color. Ask me about things through that lens. And really trying to have people understand, yeah, I do physically look different, there's no doubt. And because of that difference, yes, my path has been different. Doesn't mean that I am less than you are just because you're not used to seeing me in the skin that I'm in. And I think people are, how do I phrase this? One way for people to understand is familiarity. And I think initially when I got here, I can guarantee you, because humans are humans, there was probably people who are like, really? Does she know? Is she the? Where'd she come from? How did, you know, I'm sure, guaranteed. Not saying that that's right or wrong, just saying that's life. That's perspective. That's how people are sometimes. And for me, the important thing is what you do with that. And when I first started here, of course, people were very interested, in a polite way, I have to say, about my background. They were naturally curious. And so I've had more, in the beginning especially, more than one conversation about not just Jews of color, but Jamaican Jews, so that people recognize that, yeah, we come from lots of places in the world. So we incorporate that. I did give a lecture one time on Jews of Jamaica, and everybody got to have Jamaican rice and peas. So that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And what I would like to see is that we embrace more of our diversity. So have Mimuna, have things, have people understand that our world is quite wide. It's quite broader, you know, and try this type of food. We had a Moroccan Friday night dinner. It was fantastic. I said, you see, we can branch out. We can explore. We can learn.
It sounds like you are such a right fit at this moment in time for Beth Tikva.
I hope so.
Yeah. You can bring all of these experiences, perspectives to bear on the work that you do there. And it sounds like the rabbi is just so receptive and open to that.
Oh, he really is. He really is. So
it's wonderful. So a real powerhouse of leadership going on there. Yeah, that sounds great. You're co-founder of Jews of Color Canada. What's that group about?
Wow. So that group has had its ups and downs, its ebbs and flows. So initially, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember when it first started. It feels like a lifetime ago. I think it started after I came back from Israel. And mainly because, no, actually before that, and it wasn't really that. The first incarnation was a face group that I started called A Minority Within a Minority. And the reason I started that is because I was part of another group called, I think it was called Black Jews, Jews of Color, something like that. And I was getting exceedingly frustrated for two reasons. One, it wasn't recognized. It was more dealing with Hebrew Israelites, which wasn't making a lot of us very comfortable. There was a lot of Hebrew Israelites in that group. And also, it was just a lot. And so I said to myself, I could either sit here and fight and fight and fight, but I don't have that kind of energy. Or why don't I just create another group? So that's how a minority within a minority started. And then in that group, I started to recognize that the Canadian voice was not really heard very much. Mm-hmm. So that led to Jews of Color Canada, because even though there may be a smaller number of us, our voices are still just as important to hear. And we have similar challenges and different challenges. So, and we needed a safe space. So it started off as a Facebook group that also went out. We went out for lunch. We did activities together. We promote certain events and co-sponsor. So that's what we do.
Okay, great. And I read about an award that sounded kind of prestigious to me. The sole Canadian recipient of the inaugural JUV Nation Fellowship.
Oh my gosh.
Of Reform Judaism.
Yeah. So
what was that about?
So, many, many years ago, I was at City Shul, actually. So that's why I was really involved in, which is the Reform congregation. I was working there. And I heard about this fellowship. I think somebody sent some information. I said, oh, let me give it a go. I thought, I don't know what the odds are going to be like because, you know, I'm in Canada, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I thought, let me give it a go. So I applied for it and told them, you had to kind of present what you would do with the funding. And plus there was lots of education. And we actually became a fairly tight-knit group. I would go to New York once a month for, I think it was like 7 months or something, on a Sunday and spend the day hanging. It was great, actually, in Manhattan. And ultimately, it was to... my project was a documentary, which I am still working on Jewish diversity, but it was meeting other Jews of color from around mainly the United States, because I was the only Canadian, was actually really cool. And those connections have remained to this day.
That's great.
Yeah.
One of my later questions was actually going to be about the documentary that I read about. So you have a toehold in that project?
Like, yeah. Well, it's, I have a hook, which I can't say. What's actually stopping me, which stops a lot of budding filmmakers, is grant money. So really, that's what's stopping me. But I do have the concept, and I do have quite a lot of what they call B-roll footage. I have a lot of that because I've done filming in Canada. I've done a wee bit of filming in the U.S. I did some filming in Israel. So I do have quite a lot. And I'm just like, I'm so close. I can feel it, but I'm not there yet. but I intend to win an Oscar.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know about the Oscar, Rivka, but keep in touch with us because you know, we are always ready to screen a great film.
Oh, there you go.
Commercial, but Hamilton Jewish Film Festival. So when your documentary is ready, we're going to have a premiere.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We'll be there to talk to us about that.
My documentary.
That's really interesting. You mentioned a little bit about your professional background before Beth Tikva. So City Shul, and then you mentioned maybe a shul before that.
Right. So I actually started off at City Shul, and even actually how I got into the synagogue business, because I wasn't even sure if it was going to be a fit, but it turns out it was okay, was only because I had gone to Israel. And when I was in Israel, I came back. I was there for about a year. And when I came back, I was like, I was a nurse. I said, I don't think I want to continue slugging it out in those conditions and just not really feeling like I was making a difference anymore. And plus, as a result of my experience in Israel, two things came out of it was that, A, I wanted to work in the Jewish community because I never felt more Jewish than I did when I was in Israel. B, I came back and said, I'm going to do some work on Jewish diversity so that our community really starts to learn about and understand how diverse we were. And that was a result of Israel. Yes, the country that, you know, people say are white colonialists and all that that's when my eyes were opened. I was like, look how diverse we are. Like, we're just incredible. So those two things happened. So when I came back, I started doing work on the diversity piece, and I started looking for a job in the Jewish community. I had volunteered like a couple of years before that, but I hadn't really worked. And I found City Shul. So there I was. I started off at City Shul, was there for, I think it was maybe 6 years, give or take, 5 to 6 years. And then I went to Beit Re'im, which is a conservative synagogue. I was there over COVID, woohoo. So, and then I went to Beth Tikva.
And seamless transition, reform to conservative?
Seamless. I think because I was more familiar with conservative. I was actually pretty much, I was really familiar with Orthodox way of doing things. And then I started going to a conservative synagogue with my kids, and they went to like the Hebrew supplementary school there. So I was quite familiar with conservative. But then I hadn't been around it in a while. I didn't know a lot about reform, at like hardly anything. And the joke between the rabbi there, Rabbi Goldstein, and I was, she had asked me at my interview, she said, so what do you know about Reform Judaism? And I looked at her, I said, not a lot. And she says, well, tell me what you've heard. And I said to her, I said, I heard it's loosey-goosey tree hugging. And she laughed. She said, it is my mission to teach you that that's not what it is. So I actually learned on the job about Reform Judaism from probably one of the, like, she's like a rock star rabbi, Elise Goldstein. So I learned from her. And so going back to the conservative movement, the one thing that struck me was the first services I attended. I was like, oh, I forgot how long it was. Mm-hmm. That was the only thing.
So tell me, like, were you raised in a more Orthodox culture tradition?
No, but my background is Sephardi. So when I go to Sephardi shuls, they're, I don't even usually say shul, so it's interesting that I'm saying that. I think because we said city shul. Yeah. So when I normally go to a Sephardi synagogue, they're Orthodox, right? Basically, the minhag is Orthodox. I was raised basically as nothing really, just, you know, that expression, just Jewish. Nothing really. So, but I gravitated when I was an adult with my kids, I gravitated to that. Yeah.
So you've mentioned a couple things that I had in my mind to talk with you, that in a past life, you were an emergency department nurse. Yes. In the
yeah.
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 So quite a pivot, I'd say. I'm interested, what did you leave behind and what did you take with you?
I left behind, oh man, that, you know, I don't think I've ever been asked that question. What did I leave behind? Well, the one thing that I left behind, probably that technical stuff that I really enjoy. One of the reasons I picked Emerge was because of the puzzle that it is. Because, you know, somebody comes in and you're looking at them and you're analyzing what's going on and that. And so I kind of miss that. I miss
triage, right?
The triage bit and the, like, really working through the puzzle no matter where you are. And the techie stuff. Like, you know, it sounds silly in a way, but I really enjoyed like starting IVs, doing this thing, doing that. Like I really enjoyed that sort of thing and I really prided on myself and I was one of the best. So I do miss that. And I do miss like the kind of strange connection that that Emerge staff have with each other and that kind of like family, not family connection, even between Emerge, paramedics, police, like that kind of brother sisterhood that we had. So I kind of missed that. But what I took with me, little bits of that, like one of the things that you learn to do as an Emerge nurse is you really learn to read people. And so I brought that with me, the ability to listen, but not just listen to the words, just listen to watch the whole body. And so that I brought with me, the ability to organize myself, because you have to in the Emerge, or it looks like chaos, but everybody is, the ones who do it well are very well organized, right? And so I brought that. And plus my assertiveness, because I was a tough Emerge nurse, and also the ability to recognize that perspective. Like, yes, this may seem horrible, but just take a breath and just manage it. Don't go like up here. Just work your way through it. So kind of like an ability not to freak out. I just, like, why?
So it's both, I mean, obviously it's an important skill set and life lessons mm-hmm. that you bring to whatever situation is in your future, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Which is great. You mentioned a few minutes ago Israel, and in one of your podcasts, you said that Israel was your favorite place, that you loved it as much as Canada.
Yeah, I do.
So, and you spoke a little bit about why that was, and would you ever consider living permanently in Israel?
I'm sitting on my suitcase almost. I have plans about what I'd like what I'm going to do when I'm there, because, you know, I'm not a princess, so I have plans about what I'm going to do when I'm there. And it is a goal, whether it happens 5 years from now, 10 years from now, it has always been my goal, basically since I was a teenager. So that has not wavered one bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's great. A real focus then.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a great way to research you and learn more about the experiences of Jews of color would be by listening to Rivkush. And that was the podcast that you hosted from 2021 to February 5th of this year.
Yes, but yes. It's continuing. I'm setting it up. It's continuing.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
The auspices of the Canadian Jewish News?
No, it's all mine. All mine. Like one of the things that C. Jan and I had spoken about in the very beginning is I said, if we should ever part ways, I keep my name because that's my name. And they did. They just transferred everything over to me. So it was really wonderful.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and you had billed it as a podcast about Jews of color worth mm-hmm. knowing. And I loved the episodes that I listened to. For me, they were eye-opening and instructive. And Rivka, your voice was exuberant and dynamic and unapologetic. So I think I know the answer to this question. How did you enjoy your experience as a podcaster?
Oh, I love it. I love it, which is why I'm also determined for it to continue, because there are so many voices I need to hear from and I want to hear from. And I think it's important for people to not only just hear the stories of Jews of color, like their personal, you know, stories of their history, their family history, for example, in Iran or Iraq or things like that. It's also important to hear Jews who look like me or don't look like mainstream Jews talking about stuff, like just talking about regular stuff, to normalize that we're also just Jews. And we are going to talk about the food at Kiddush. We are going to, you know, and that there wasn't enough. And we're going to talk about Israel. And we're going to have viewpoints. And we're not just one-dimensional.
Well, I'm excited to know that Rav Kush is continuing. And I have a feeling that a lot of people would really, really benefit from and really enjoy, you know, hopping on and hearing the episodes. I do.
Thank you.
What I wanted to do at this moment was maybe circle back to the documentary that we showed at our film festival called Rabbi on the Block. Many people attended, and for those who didn't, it's about Tamar Manasseh, a community activist from the south side of Chicago who brings her Jewish values into her neighborhood to do good and improve the world, tikkun olam. She's Black and she's Jewish. She raises her children as Jewish, and she fulfills her goal of becoming ordained as a rabbi. In the film, Tamar voices her exasperation and frustration about the how and why questions put to her and Jews of color. Let's listen for a moment.
There's always this question of, how did you become Jewish? Everybody wants to know, and I never answer that question. I go talk sometimes at different temples and, you know, and people will come up to me and say stuff like, oh my God, I have so many questions. Like, how did you become Jewish? And do you like being Jewish? And like stuff like that. How? Why? Why? And people often want to know, is your husband Jewish? Is my husband white? That's cold for, is my husband white? No, I'm not married. Like, it's always this, how did this happen? How did it happen? How did it happen? Oh my God, I have to take a picture with you and send it to my mom. She's not going to believe I met a Black Jew. Very National Geographic-esque.
So Rivka, that's a bit of voice from the film. And I know from having talked to you that some of the same circumstances have happened to you. And you mentioned that even at the beginning of this podcast. How do you manage it? How do you redirect it when people ask you those how and why? How did this come about? Can this be?
It depends. First of all, it depends on the person who's asking. And, you know, one of that skill that I mentioned before about being able to read people and know what place it's coming from, right? So I have answered everything from, I've been as snarky, if you will, as to say the same way you did. People say, how'd you become the same way you did? Uh-huh. And then I get the, but the same way you did. I have also recently said to somebody, I am not prepared to discuss my lineage with you. Like, it's kind of gross, you know? It's like, you just met me and you want me to give you basically my whole biography. I have also said to people, do you do this to everyone else? Or I've said to people, depending on where I feel it's coming from, I've just explained. I've just kindly said, da-da-da. But I don't know if I mentioned this then, but it also depends on one of my favorite ways that somebody asked. I have two ways. One of them was when I was working as an eMERGE nurse, and the hospital I worked in, there were a lot of Jewish clientele. So I was kind of used to people looking at my Megan David and kind of looking at me and, you know, wondering whether they say anything. And one time there was an urgent situation happening, so I had to move somebody out of a room really quickly. So I ran her out in the stretcher, ran down the hall, ran down to the other room, put her in the room, hooked her up to the monitor, and started to leave. And she said to me, she says, wait, excuse me. And I turned around, totally exasperated, I'm sure, because all I was thinking about was like the emergency that was coming in. And I said, yes, can I help you? And she said, when you came and got me, she said, you actually didn't really say anything, which was probably true. She said, you just took me off the monitor. She said, and then you ran down the hall. She said, you took me off the monitor. We left the room. She said, as you're running down the hallway, she said, the stretcher bounced off the wall. And when it bounced off the wall, you said, oi. She said, that's when I knew you were Jewish. So that just made me laugh. And I smiled and I said, yes, I am. And I took off. But, you know, it, like I said, depends on how people ask me. One time in Montreal, I was at my equal other's family, his cousin's wedding, and it was at Chabad. And I was standing outside because even though it was Montreal weather, I was standing outside end of the winter. And this gentleman was standing next to me and he turned to me and he introduced himself and he gave me his biography right away. He introduced himself and he said, I'm from blah, 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 da, da, da. My family goes da, da. And then he turned to me and he said, and you? And I said, I'm da, da, da. I'm from da, da, da. My family made me so comfortable. And then he also said, oh, he goes, yeah, he says, Jamaica. He says, your family's from Jamaica. He says, there are a lot of Jews in Jamaica. He says, I used to go back and forth. And I remember thinking to myself, not once did he just did the right thing and assumed I was Jewish. Full stop. At a Chabad wedding, odds are probably great that I am. Right?
Mm-hmm. In the film, Tamar talked about growing up Black and Jewish and that she had to toughen up and face and be ready for the challenges. So what I wondered, Rivka, was as a Jew of color growing up in Toronto, what challenges did you face? Did you toughen up?
I became as tough as nails, sometimes to the point where I wish I hadn't. I wish I wasn't sometimes, because the danger is that you can also automatically assume the negative. Like you're almost like hyper aware. It's like how we are generally as a people sometimes with anti-Semitism, especially now. Like you're almost like over, like you're on guard, right? And so because of like people questioning my identity, I was called not in Toronto, but I was called Schwarze. I've been called Cushy. You know, I've been like, so because of those things, of course, when I walk into a space, I'm already like walls up, bracing myself for the battle. And no matter how long I've been in that space, I'm never going to be 100% relaxed. That includes my place of employment. I will never be 100% relaxed.
Wow, that's a serious statement. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's like it's the microaggressions that still come out. Like somebody asking me, this made me laugh actually, after the fact. But it's these preconceptions people have of people of color, period. So this person said to me, where did you grow up? But she didn't just say, so where did you grow up? She goes, where did you grow up? Are you from Scarborough? And Scarborough has a high population of Black people. And I remember thinking to herself, why would you just assume I'm from Scarborough? Like, I'm actually not. But why would you just, and that's like that. Think about what you say and think about why you're saying it. Why did you pick Scarborough? Why did you not say, where did you grow up? North Toronto? Where did you grow up? Downtown? You picked Scarborough. Because that's the place you know there are lots of Black people. Like it's those kind of like preconceptions that people have that they need to check. And it's those things I always sit back and wait for. Sometimes people prove me right.
Yeah. In the film, Rabbi on the Block, it identified and articulated the controversial, the unspoken. And that was the established place and role of Ashkenazi, white Central and Eastern European Jews, as dominant, as normative. Mm-hmm. Where, in fact, Ashkenazi are the new kids on the block, are they not?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So Sephardi and Mizrahi Jews, Jews with ties to the Middle East, North Africa, parts of Asia, were expelled from their homeland centuries ago. Mm-hmm. So there's an important moment in the film where Tamar's rabbi speaks about that. And we'll listen to that for a second.
It means that we want to be included in the broader Jewish community. We don't want to have people looking at us sideways. When you go into a synagogue and you happen to look like me, and you have your siddur, you have a kippah, you have your talis, hopefully, you know, you're Jewish. Jew can be anyone. And it just doesn't mean that because your family's from Europe or Lithuania, that now somehow or another, that makes you extra special. And it, I need you, D. I am a Jew, period. But yet, there's this, are you Jewish? And that really needs to stop.
So, Rivka, what I wondered was, do you have ideas on how we can broach that sensitive subject and challenge the paradigm? How do we embrace the diversity within the diversity?
We start by, I think part of it is to start by exposing people to it, because I'm always surprised, and I probably shouldn't be, but I'm always surprised when people say to me, oh, I'd never heard of that. For example, we had Mimuna, and most of the people who were there, they were like, oh, I never heard of this. And I thought, it's kind of sad. This is like Moroccan Jews, you know? These are people who have been around like forever and a day. But the exposure to it opened eyes, and it was like, oh, and it's like, yeah, we're different and the same. We're different and the same. We're the same, but we just do it differently, right? And doing that in safe environments, like having like that was a nice, easy way to bring it in. I mean, in this setting, I know at City Shul, for example, this gentleman who was not Sephardi, but he knew the trope, he would read Torah with the Sephardic trope. And so people would be exposed to something different. And I think it's really important that we do that in us. Just do it. Yeah, not in a way that's performative, but in a way that says these are also our people. And I find that especially now, people seem to be more and more receptive to that. Sometimes I get pushback where they say, well, why are we dividing ourselves? Why are we dividing ourselves? And I said, it's not a matter of dividing ourselves. It's a matter of recognizing that we're not all the same and embracing that and learning from each other and learning that, yes, Yiddish is cool, but so is Ladino. And so is the Arabic that Moroccans, Jews spoke. And all of it is all of us. And we should learn about each other that way. Because what does divide us is when we don't learn about each other. Learning about each other and acknowledging that we are diverse is not divide. That does not divide us. That unites us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And really, you know, that was one of our goals of inviting you on to this podcast. And that came out of the conversation at the Jewish Film Festival, Hamilton Jewish Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And this whole, for us, you know, as a committee, being able to screen all of the international films that we did for months ahead of the film festival, they were eye-opening to many of us. And we talked about that, you know, in our conversations leading up to making our choices, that the films were spectacular and what an opportunity we had to you know, Polish films, Israeli films, mm-hmm. Jewish films, the films about Moroccan culture. Many of these, the practices, hearing other languages really opened up eyes and hearts and minds. And so, you know, I guess we feel really proud that we, through film, through art, we have a way of opening that up, you know, and hence coming to you. I know in one of your podcasts, you actually said you're hopeful one day that we wouldn't have to explain our diversity.
It just is that we just are.
It just is. Yeah. Right. So as you were the night of the film festival and as you are today, you're so very generous with your time. And honestly, I hate for this conversation to end and we'll see what ways we have of keeping our newfound friendship going.
Absolutely.
Like that. And I know Wendy would too. And certainly, Hamilton and our Federation. It's our hope, Rivka, that through this episode of the Spiel, that in some small way, we cracked open a door where maybe there had been a wall, that we've allowed some light to shine through. If people could see you, as we did the night of the festival, you have just such a lovely smile, such radiance. And what I hope
you.
Is that through your voice, that personality, your personality shines through. It sure does as I look at you
in the
computer screen.
So, well, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Once again, we thank you so much.
The Spiel on Hamilton podcast is made possible through the generosity of the Allen and Millie Gould Family Foundation. The Spiel on Hamilton is a production of the Hamilton Jewish News, hosted and produced by me, Wendy Schneider, and edited by Colin Van Hattem. If you have any comments, questions, or stories you would like to hear on the show, please email wschneider@jewishhamilton.org. We would love to hear from you. Make sure to subscribe to The Spiel on Hamilton on your favorite podcast platform to learn more about our wonderful community.